It's going to be a fundraiser here in St. Louis next Wednesday at the Sheldon Concert Hall for the Anti-Defamation League, and the headliner that night is going to be the one and only Bruce Valanche. You may have seen Bruce a couple of years ago when he was a regular on the Hollywood Squares. You may also have seen a terrific documentary about him in 1999 called Get Bruce, which talked about his reputation as being one of the top comedy writers in Hollywood, a guy who has worked on many, many award shows, many of them with our good friend John Max, who's, of course, a regular on this show every week on KMOX. I'm happy to welcome Bruce to the show this afternoon. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Hi. I'm grand. How are you? I didn't know John was a regular.
Yeah, John is. I actually gave John his start in show business.
You're the one?
Yeah. He was working for me a long, long time ago, and then one day came to me and said that Jay Leno had made him an offer, and I said, I'll double whatever Jay's paying you. And he said, Paul, you can't double what you're paying me. So he moved out to Burbank and met you and all the rest of the folks there. And you guys are part of this go-to comedy team out there for everything, aren't you?
It seems to be, yeah. I mean, I like it. I mean, I don't think everybody calls us. You know, I mean, Dave Chappelle didn't take me to Africa and he decided to have a breakdown. But so it's not that kind of go-to.
I think that's because he knew.
Which means you're written for everybody.
I think he didn't call you because he knew you wouldn't go, Bruce.
No. That's not true. I went to Namibia and had a baby. Oh, I'm not supposed to mention that. Sorry, that
was... You and Angelina, I forgot.
Brad swore me to secrecy on that. God, now my life isn't worth anything.
St. Louisans may have seen you on stage here about 3.5 years ago when you were in the national touring company of Hairspray, and you played at the Fabulous Fox. You played Edna Turnblad, who, of course, in the movie now is played by John Travolta. What do you think of his performance?
Who? Oh, you know, he was adorable. I mean, they rewrote it a lot. I mean, it didn't have the same edge that the stage show had. And he looked like Kirstie Alley before she got the Jenny Craig money. That was my principal objection, is that he was just too pretty.
Yeah.
He wasn't enough of a slag. I was a real slag. A slag and proud of it. But, you know, that theater, the Fox, is so big that you have to, like, all the makeup, everything has to be gigantic, because you come out there and you realize that the last rows of the audience are like in Edwardsville.
Yes.
Across the river.
Yep.
It's huge.
It's only 4,000 seats.
Yeah, but it's built on that gigantic old Hollywood scale.
Yeah.
You know, it's not built on a theater scale, so you really have to project everything. And fortunately, being big is not my problem.
No.
And Hairspray.
Absolutely. That's why you were perfect for that role. It's a big role for a big guy.
There's a dressing room. The star has a dressing room. It's got like a fireplace in it. It's like an apartment.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. That theater is really legendary.
Now, having done the national touring company of that and also playing the role on Broadway, why haven't you done more shows?
I'm tough to cast. I'm not, standard issue anything. I would love to do some more stuff. And we keep talking about it, but it just hasn't come to fruition yet. But I would just kind of be crazy to do it. I mean, I think the musical The Elephant Man is waiting for me.
Bruce singing I Am Not an Animal, right there.
Somewhere there's an angel with big ears.
Do you prefer being the guy behind the scenes or the guy on stage?
Oh, I think I like being on stage. It's fun. You get the adrenaline rush. But obviously, I don't think I had a burning desire to do that, or I would have done it much sooner. I don't think I would have waited until I was in my 50s.
Well, that's not true. You you appeared on Bosom Buddies some 25 years ago.
I did. I had two lines many years ago. I was the Orson Welles of hot dog eaters. I was busy. It was Tom Hanks quits his job and goes and sells hot dogs on the street, and I was his customer. It was a never-to-be-forgotten case. Somehow the Emmy overlooked us that year.
And right after that, the offers didn't come pouring in?
They came pouring in from people who liked the way I ate hot dogs, but they weren't anything I could really discuss.
Now, I was looking up some stuff on you today, and knowing quite a bit about you from my years with John, he's talked about his work with you on award shows and those sort of things. I did not know until just a few hours ago that you worked maybe you didn't, you could verify this for me, on one of the legendary pieces of television in 1978, a little thing called the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes, and I wear it with pride.
Now, for my audience who may not be aware that there ever was a Star Wars Holiday Special, explain to them what that was.
First of all, you have to go back to the days where there were only three television stations, basically, the three networks. And to do a TV special was a really big deal. And Star Wars had come out the year before and was a gigantic hit. And George Lucas was sort of concerned that the audience would remember the picture while he was shooting The Empire Strikes Back. And so he decided to, he sold CBS one of his old stories as a big holiday singing, dancing special. And it was basically as a way of keeping Star Wars alive. And had I known 30 years ago when we did the thing that this particular piece of crap would be so revered now, I would have paid closer attention. But it was the 70s, and many of us were chemically altered. And when you see the show, which I recommend if you see it, be chemically altered, because it's ridiculous. I mean, the story that George decided to dramatize had the Wookiees as central characters. And they're very difficult to write for because they sound like, you know, fat people having orgasms. every character goes, and it was difficult to write dialogue for them.
Yes.
So, and in between, we had musical numbers. We had Bea Arthur, we had Art Carney, Diane Carroll, we had Jefferson Starship. It truly is a mind-boggling experience. And, you know, what happened was it disappeared because in those days, if you did bad television, it was on once and nobody ever saw it again. But now we live in the YouTube universe where every awful thing you ever did comes back to confront you. It's like this is Jung should be alive to be experiencing all of this.
But I heard that George Lucas was, I don't know if he was embarrassed by it or horrified by it. One of those two words applied. And I heard that he bought up the only copy of it that there was and made sure that there were none ever available ever again.
That's entirely possible. I don't really know. But there are copies around. I've got a copy of it. And I didn't have one from the old days. You know, back then we didn't have... I mean, they were just starting to do videotaping,
right?
To do personal videotapes, VHS, and all that kind of stuff. So nobody really had copies of it, but they do surface. I mean, they're on eBay, and there's some stuff floating around the internet that you can find. But I mean, George certainly made sure that it would never be released in any kind of real format,
mm-hmm.
you know, where people could actually pay money.
Did it have Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill?
Yes, and they all do a number at the end. They do a song called Happy Life Day, which is a holiday that we invented. Because the thing aired Thanksgiving weekend, so it was a holiday. There was, you know, festivities were in the air. So we came up with an intergalactic holiday that they could all celebrate.
Wow. Talk about being chemically altered. You must have been.
It was quite a spectacle. And George really is. I think what he's embarrassed about it now is that, you know, what happened to Star Wars in the interim is it became this gigantic cult. You know, it's six movies later and 30 years already, and so there are people who live and breathe Star Wars. And when they found out, the younger ones, that there was this thing that had been done in 1978. And they got a hold of it, and they saw how it trampled on their beloved myths. They got really angry, and they got angry with George because they found out that he really was behind it. And so I think George got really upset by that because he, you know, God knows he's the last one who wants to betray the myth of the Jedi. And so I get really angry sometimes, mail from people sometimes saying, how could you be involved in this desecration of the Imperial, yada, yada, yada. And, well, you know, I just keep saying, you have to adjust your medication, sir.
Yeah, and by the way, the check cleared. That's why.
Exactly right. The check cleared.
But did that keep you from being hired to write extra dialogue for Jar Jar Binks?
No, I wish I had, because I think he needed a couple of jokes. But what I have to emphasize is the show was a huge ratings success. It was on Friday night of Thanksgiving weekend, 1978, and it was a gigantic hit. The critics, of course, hated it. They made complete blutzer from it, as we say in French. But the audience, the people tuned in. And I think that there's a lot of incredulity from people who weren't born yet, who, you know, signed on to Star Wars later on. They can't believe that anybody would do anything so ridiculous. And when you watch it, first of all, the production values are very lush. I mean, it was a hugely expensive show because it was shot like a movie. And it took forever to do, and we had the very first Cirque du Soleil people on the thing doing acrobatics and stuff and in a hologram. I mean, it's not without interest in the technical, clinical way.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, you kind of look at, you know, if you're into Star Wars, your jaw just drops. What have they done to Boba Fett?
Well, I have not checked it out on YouTube, but now I'm going to go and see if I can find it. I didn't know that there were any copies.
It's around. Oh, yeah, it's around.
Talking with Bruce Valanche, comedy writer, comedian, who's going to be hosting, or rather headlining, a night of ad-libbing. That ADL at the beginning of ad-libbing stands for the Anti-Defamation League. It's next Wednesday at the Sheldon Concert Hall here in St. Louis. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Have you, by the way, in all these years of being a comedian and a comedy writer and a script doctor for other people, have you ever written your own stuff? I mean, is there a Bruce Valanche screenplay waiting to be produced?
Oh, there are about 15 of them. You know, I mean, everything possible has happened. Studios close, stars die. I mean, I wrote something for John Belushi, and he hated it so much he killed himself. You know, it was like that. He actually was a good friend, and we had a project in development right when he died. Anything that could happen to a script has happened to one or another of my scripts, and they're all, of course, they're all unalloyed works of genius, and they could be filmed at any moment if anybody happens to be listening, Mr. Spielberg.
Now, tell me about the Belushi project. I'm curious. What did you cook up for him?
It was, God, this was so long ago. It was called Sour Grapes, and he was running a vineyard in the wine country of San Francisco. There was a situation where his wife, he thought his wife was dead, but she wasn't dead. It was, you know, it was a comedy in the 70s. What can I tell you? I mean, he probably was totally correct to kill himself. He didn't kill himself.
But there was
not
no...
accidentally. But it was, you know, one of many things that he had in the hopper, but he seemed to like it. So.
But there was no one else who could step into the role?
The what?
There was no one else who could step into the role after he died?
Well, I think it was his project, and so you'd have to go find somebody else who really wanted to do it badly.
Gotcha.
And it was tailored for him, and what happens to those things is they frequently go by the wayside unless somebody else powerful is attached to it. You know, if I had been a big director and I'd wanted to do this, I would probably have the clout to go out and shop with some other star.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't at the time. I was a writer who I knew John from Chicago, from Second City. I used to write for the Chicago Tribune, and I lived next door to Second City. And John and Jim used to crash in my. I had a very big apartment, very big cheap apartment. And all the Second City people used to stay there during blizzards because they couldn't afford taxis. So I had the Belushi brothers. I had John and Bill Murray and Brian Doyle Murray. And Gilda Radner was there. Dan Aykroyd. And they were all appearing at Second City before Saturday Night Live started. This goes back to the Jurassic period.
Yeah, that's okay. We could go down memory lane a little bit here. But let's bring it to the present tense. As a big-time script doctor in Hollywood, what have you fixed lately?
Oh, you never can tell. I mean, you're not allowed to speak. They pay you big money to never reveal. Also, you know, the Writers Guild has got a thing where they're very persnickety about credits on movies. So you can't just kind of blithely announce, yes, well, you know, I wrote Gone with the Wind. Another guy's name is on it, but it was all me.
Yeah.
You can't really do that. But there are some out there.
When that happens, are you brought in to punch up a scene or a role for an actor or actress, or do you go in and rewrite the whole thing?
I have done all three. I've been known for Midlerizing certain projects because I have this relationship with Bette Midler that goes back 37 years, which, as I say, is difficult because she's only 32.
Yeah.
But I've done a lot of that. I've done for specific actors. I've done where they think a sequence isn't funny, and would you maybe come in and throw some jokes at it and see what happens? And I've done page one rewrites of things. So it's multifaceted.
And since you've done so much writing for other people, when you come to St. Louis next week to appear at the Sheldon for this ADL fundraiser, will everything you say on stage have been written by you?
Unless it's been stolen by me. You know, there's always that possibility.
No, but I mean, do you ever go to somebody like John or somebody like that and say, hey, I'm doing this thing and I just can't make this work?
You know, I haven't done that, actually. I haven't. I have to confess. I've managed to figure it out myself. Although sometimes, you know, John and I have dinner with our other partner, Dave Loon, who's now writing Dancing with the Stars. And we have, once a month, we go and eat meat, you know, and we pretend we're real Hollywood types.
Yeah.
And drink wine and martinis and, you know, all that. And we talk about, we talk things over and we'll throw stuff at each other and we will all kind of say, I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that. Oh, that's funny. I'm going to use that. And then we'll see if our lines show up in each other's material.
You know, it's funny you mentioned going out to eat meat. When I was out there last October and called John, and he said, yeah, let's go to dinner. I'll take you to this place. I guarantee you'll see two things, James Caan and pepper bacon. And I said to him, I'm not familiar with her.
Oh, but James Caan is.
Do you know the restaurant I'm talking about? Do you know the place I'm talking about, Bruce?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, there's a place where they actually have strips of pepper bacon on the bar that you can have while you're having a drink.
Yeah, I do know that place.
I'd never seen it before. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you, and I know a lot of St. Louisans are looking forward to seeing you next Wednesday at the Sheldon Concert Hall for a benefit for the Anti-Defamation League. Here's a number to call for tickets, 314-432-6868. That's 432-6868. And there's a chance that part of that might be tax deductible. I don't know what part of it. Consult your own comedy writer. Bruce, thanks so much for your time today.
Nice to be with you.
I appreciate it. Bruce Valanche here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.